Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the January 19th, 2015 show of For Your Benefit. Special day, Martin Luther King Day, day we celebrate his life, accomplishments, and memories. Now, on the show today, we have Dr. Michael Creedon, and he is the chair of the ATSU, that's A.T. Still University, Studies Projects Advisor on Aging Research and Research and Grants.
And whatnot.
And we could keep going on and on. So good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty. Right before we went on air, we were talking about the significance of today, and Michael has a really... I would say it's a fairly powerful
memory.
Story and memory. Tell us, please.
Well, my memory is I landed in America in 1964 from the Republic of Ireland as a young Irish kid, a newly minted college grad and so forth. And Portsmouth, Virginia was my original landing point. But I landed into America as a 23-year-old. And... I wasn't in America that long. You know, I was in America maybe 6 months, I suppose, before I started realizing that, you know, there was still a lot of segregation. And the Catholic hospital in the town I happened to be living in at the time integrated in 1968. And the public hospital 2 years after that. And so, and when Martin Luther King and that whole March for Washington and Jobs for Freedom was starting and around, I went to the stadium, the baseball stadium in my town, and there was a rally there, and there was a prayer service there, and so forth around this the group going through this town, this community, on their way to Washington, and we prayed for a peaceful parade and a peaceful outcome. And I took some clothes because I thought, well, you know, somebody might need a little bit of extra comfort for the road. And that was one of my most powerful memories, was that march to Washington for jobs and freedom, that I had that little moment of contact with. So you know, my own early experiences in America were I was at that time when so many things were happening. John F. Kennedy had just been killed the year before I came to America. So there was a lot of things happening in America. It was a period of tremendous change in the culture and the society. And I was a little kid from Ireland trying to learn the ropes of how America worked. And it was a great learning period for me. It was a great learning period for our society. And, you know, a period of pain, but also... a period of great change and growth, I thought. So I too want to honor Martin Luther King for being the man who called us all to a better America.
All right, thank you. Now, you're going to help us for a better retirement.
Well, hopefully.
Right?
Yes.
And we're going to discuss the interests of single retirees. Michael is a frequent lecturer on the lecture circuit for pre-retirement seminars with NITP. He writes books, too, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I'm working on one right now on retirement in Ireland with a colleague in Dublin.
Okay, and addresses these issues. And especially now with the leading edge of the baby boomers, me being one of them, although the leading edge is older than I am at 68 and not far from it anyway. And you say here recent estimates of more than 7 million Americans over the age of 65 are single.
Yeah. And that's going up. The numbers are going to be going up quite rapidly because, as you said, the leading edge of the baby boom is 68 right now. So that in no time flat, the leading edge will be 70 plus. And, you know, single status, about 4% of older adults, retirees, have never married. But, you know, a lot of people become single during retirement. And of course, if you look at, you know, widowhood, for example, it actually, the average age of widowhood is in the somewhere in the low 60s. People don't realize how early this thing can happen. And it's partially because American women outlive American men by a few years, and American women very often marry men who are older than them. So widowhood happens, and sometimes earlier than people expect. So, and then there's the other little issue called divorce. And actually, the divorce rate among U.S. retirees has been going up fairly steadily in recent years, but slowly, but steadily. And the last data I've seen about it suggested it's around 12% right now of U.S. retirees. I was looking at a population survey from 2010 just lately, and they were saying 10%. But I've seen data since that. I think the more recent data suggests it's now up to about 12% of retirees go through divorce at some point of retirement. And, of course, why is the divorce rate going up? Well, some of it is we're all living a lot longer. And you look forward to all these years and say, well, do I have to put up with this for the next 25 years? The other reality is more and more, because of the baby boom, more and more people come into go into retirement as dual career families. So you've got incomes on both sides of the aisle, as it were, and you have benefits on both sides of the aisle. And so it's easier to split up, you see, when you have an income. And so some of it is the economics have changed over time and more people are freer economically. When you have a one-income family, economics of divorce can be painful for the party who doesn't have the salary.
So on the economic side, somebody might be better off than the other in a couple. But on the emotional side, what do you find? I mean, at 60-whatever or at 70-whatever, I would imagine it's harder to find friends. You can find maybe a few, but
you're moving my thunder a little ahead of what I was thinking. But actually,
well, you can go back.
I think if you're looking at, you know, the reality is as we get older, friends, you start getting to be 60, 70, 80, your friends start dying. And lots of us, our friends tend to be exactly the same age as ourselves. Most people, our friendships tend to be, people we met in school or people we met early in our work career or people our neighbours. And so very, very often you're approaching retirement and you start looking around at who your friends are and they're all the same age as yourself, which sounds grand at 40, but you start to be getting up around 80 and hey, there a lot of them are gone. So you have to have friends younger than you. And so as you approach retirement, one of your jobs, I think, is to take a hard look at your support system. And do you have, a lot of people are coming into retirement, of course, have children and grandchildren. And I often say that the emotional driver of life for an awful lot of retirees is the grandchildren. And you'd be surprised how many times I do these retirement programs. And I'm asking people at the beginning of the program, what's the first word that comes into their head when they think about retirement? I quite frequently, nobody mentions family. And of course, that blows my little Irish brain. Because as I said, I'm aware of the fact that the grandchildren are actually a very, very important part of the life of a lot of older adults. So if you have children and grandchildren, you have a guaranteed kind of interest and involvement with younger people. But if you don't happen to have children or grandchildren and your friends are all the same age as yourself, then I think it's time for you to start getting into maybe working with the Scouts or working with your local church or volunteering at the local school, meeting younger people. and developing relationships with younger people is a top priority if you don't have children and grandchildren of your own. And even if you do, I think it's important to reach out to younger people in your life.
In our seminars, you generally come on the last day, which I always like. That's by design. I don't know if you know that. Because after all this heavy stuff, excuse me, good information, you leave them standing. And it's the reality factor. The other is reality factor, but you're dealing with the human side.
Well, I'm talking about your life.
They feel good coming out of that.
This is about a life. You know, the money is there to support the life and not the life to support the money. And so, you know, what do you want to do with 25 good years? Is I think the heart of the matter when you're approaching retirement is, do you have an agenda? And because I honestly believe it's retirement to. It's not retirement from. So once you start looking at it as an opportunity, retirement as an opportunity, big time, then you have to look at it as retirement too. And that means you have to have an agenda. And so I push people very hard to look at what are they really, really interested in? Do they have anything that they're really interested in? Because I think if something turns you on once, maybe it would turn you on again. And I think finding your bliss, finding what really, really excites you and turns you on is actually one of the big things you have to think about as you approach retirement. So that, because why would you be wasting your life doing stuff that bores you? And why would you be wasting your life doing stuff that doesn't give you any kind of a sense of excitement when you're in charge of the whole thing?
When should you start this agenda?
Well, I think, personally, I think hobbies are a very, very important part of preparing for retirement. If you don't have a hobby, I really think you better start thinking about finding something. And it could be learning to play the piano, or it could be pottery. There's all kinds of. I have a sister in Ireland who's writing poetry, and she started in her 50s, and she's been producing poems by the carload ever since. So, you know, starting. I bump into people in my classes regularly who've had a hobby that they've had for years, and. And that's like woven part of their life. And it's knitting, or it's painting, or it's, you know, short stories. That people have hobbies, I think that's a really positive preparation building block for the future.
Could a hobby be public service?
Well, I look at that. I tend to look at that as a separate category called volunteering.
Okay.
Now, there's another subcategory too, which is probably called work. I mean, you know, we've tended to think of retirement as the end of work. And it doesn't have to be. About 10% of retirees want another full-time job. About close to 50% of retirees now want part-time work of some kind. And actually, flexibly scheduled worker. You start talking to retiree workers now, you'll find out that the word that you hear all the time is ultimately the word is control. I work for who I want, for how long I want, and I quit when I want.
Okay, that was excellently said, because Andrew just told us it's time to control your show and take a break.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10:05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAPA today at waepa.org. WAPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Okay, we're back, and we were in the middle of a dialogue with Dr. Michael Creedon, and we were talking about control.
And the word control is related to people who think they might want to work in retirement. And I had previously been saying that about 10% of retirees want full-time jobs, another full-time job, but about close to 50% now want part-time or flexibly scheduled work of some kind. And when you interview them, the word that keeps coming up, is in my head at least, is control. Because what they're looking for is a bit more flexibility and a bit more freedom than they've had in the past. They don't mind working. In fact, they like a bit of work. They don't mind making a few dollars. They don't mind getting out of the house and having something to do and being with other people. And there's some very positive things in their heads when they think about work. So right now, it's close to 50% of retirees for whom work would be part of the schedule. And when you're thinking about singles, you see, one of the questions singles have to ask themselves is, how much am I depending on my workplace for my social contacts? Because somebody's going home to a family or to children or to a spouse or whatsoever. You know, they have social contacts built into their day, whether they like it or not. But for people who are single, you know, you've got your pad and you leave the pad to go off to the job, and you're at the job 8 hours or whatever, and you're with people all day long, and so you're getting social contact through the workplace, I think one of the problems is that people approaching retirement who are single have to face is, do I have other social contacts besides this job? Do I have friends elsewhere? I hear occasionally of people who keep going back to the workplace after they've retired. And my general rule of thumb is the first time you go back, they're going to be very enthusiastic about seeing you. Jealous of the trips you're taking and saying they wish they could be doing this with you, etc., etc. And the second time you go back, you know, they have a little bit less time and they've got a meeting coming up. And the third time you come back, they're looking at each other and they're saying, what's he doing around here? Doesn't he have something else to do, you know? And the truth is the old machine keeps rolling and a lot of what they're talking about is shop and work and things like that. And I know of like two federal agencies. The Geological Survey is one, where retirees have an opportunity to continue doing some volunteer work there. And another place is National Institute for Standards and Technology, where they have retirees continue participation there a lot. But I don't know hardly any other federal agencies which you might say have a programmatic involvement of their retirees.
And you teach at them enough.
I'm across the spectrum of federal agencies fairly regularly. So as I said, if your friendships are all through your work, the work moves on and the stuff moves on, and they're not particularly, you know, hugely excited about you showing up to get your social contact on a regular basis. So you need to find other social contacts and other involvements for your life.
All righty, Michael, you always have a story, but you even had a story about this morning, and you came into the studio he was right on the button.
Well, let me say that I have 8 points I want to make about being single in retirement, and one of the points I wanted to make about being single in retirement is the role of pets in the life of older people, and that singles particularly, you know, a pet can be a companion. and a pet can mean a lot in your life. And I testified before the General Assembly of Maryland some years ago on a bill to for tenants to be able to have pets in their apartments. And of course, the room was full of real estate brokers and realtors, and the lady legislator had not contacted the senior centres of Maryland, and the upshot was there weren't any big senior citizen groups present, and the bill went down in flames, despite my trenchant efforts to point out how important pets can be in the lives of older people. So let me tell you a real quick story about the importance of pets, which is about my mother. And my mother raised a big family and ran several businesses along with my dad. And here she was, I'm visiting her, I'm home in Ireland, I'm visiting my mom. And I walk in at 10 p.m. at night one evening. And there she is by the fireplace by herself with her little Lhasa Apso dog called Lana. And she turns and she looks at me and she says, Lana is my friend. And she said, Lana welcomes me when I come home to this empty house. Wow. And I never forgot. By the way, Lana is now, my mother passed away some years ago. Lana is now my youngest brother. And when I visit my youngest brother's house, he must know the smell of every single member of the Creedon family, because I get an enthusiastic welcome from Lana whenever I show up at my brother's door. Lana welcomes me too. So I think of my mother and how important that pet was to her. But I really think pets can be a very important part of the future. And actually, 51% of baby boomers have pets. So it's a significant proportion of people who are moving towards retirement have pets. And regard them as a need. This, by the way, was in the AARP bulletin on October the 1st, 2010. If you want to go back to the AARP bulletin for October 1, 2010, there's a story in there about baby boomers and pets. And, they saw them as a need. And Dr. Marty Becker, who's written a book called Your Dog, The Owner's Manual, which I'd recommend to people, says you need to be able to dedicate at least an hour a day to your pet and for feeding and cleaning and so forth and taking the dog for a walk and all this kind of stuff. He figures a minimum of an hour a day commitment to your pet to do these various things. But his book was published in 2011, I think, and it's a good little manual. But I walk in the front entrance of this building this morning, and there's a guy there with a little pet, a dog. And I notice on his jacket is Washington Animal Rescue League. And I said to him, oh, I said, you have a dog? And he said, yes. And he said, you're with the Animal Rescue League? He said, yes, I am. And I said, well, I'm talking about a little radio show this morning about pets and retirement as part of retirement. He said, oh, we have a special program for people over 55. I said, tell me. He said, our special program is if you're over 55 and you adopt one of our pets that's 5 years old or older, we will waive all adoption fees. So, folks, let me give you the phone number for the Washington Animal Rescue League, because I thought that was a neat program. 202-375-7750. 202-375-7750. You might be interested in getting a pet. They have a program for you if you're 55 plus. So I just think that the pet gives companionship. The pet is like the older people. The pet is like a member of the family. And there's a professor called Dr. Jerry Dickey is her name, who was with Missouri Western University. And she did interviews with pet owners. And she said these interviews she did with the pet owners, about 40, 50 interviews, she said they all regard the pet as a family member. And she said the main theme they all had was that pets promote the quality of life for older people. That's what all of the pet owners were saying. And what were their fears? The fears were, will the pet die before me? And how will I ensure the care and affection for that pet when I'm gone? So that there are worries and fears attached, but they regard that pet as a member of the family. And so I'm a strong believer in the value of having a pet. If you're moving into retirement and you're single, that maybe the pet could be a canid, could be a budgie, or it could be a cat, or it could be a dog. Although dogs are the most popular pets, and of course, the good thing about a cat is you can go away for a weekend and the cat will manage for itself. Dogs can't manage for themselves. But if you're traveling and you have pets, actually, there was an article in the Sunday New York Times on December 8th of 2013 about, in the travel section, about traveling with a dog. And a fellow called Danny Hakim, H-A-K-I-M, wrote an article saying, here is, when here is London, was the name of the article, about his golden retriever and moving to London with his golden retriever and the various challenges associated with taking his pet with him, moving to, over to England. So there's lots of challenges, lots of opportunities. I think pets can be a very useful thing, part of your life for the future. But, you know, I mentioned earlier to you that hobbies can be an important part of the agenda too. And thirdly, that you really need to do an inventory of where your friendships are, whether you have people younger than you in your life. And that might lead you into volunteering or might lead you to your local church or synagogue or other religious institution. There's lots of places you can get contact with younger people. Very. I had a guy, can I tell you another story?
Oh, go ahead.
I had a lady in class recently, and she came up to me after class. And she said, my dad retired at 60. So 14 years later, he's 70. He's now 74. And she said, my dad decided he was good at math. So he decided to volunteer at the local grade school, third grade math class. And 14 years later, the principal of the school writes him a letter and says, we have done a review of our math programs at our school. And we have, I realized that every single year for the last 14 years, the grades of the third graders in math have gone up significantly. And we attribute this completely to your involvement with those children. So I thought to myself, you know, here's a guy who has a little interest called math, and he takes it to third graders in his local school. And he obviously involves the kids and enlivens the kids' understanding of math. And it's he's volunteering. They know he's not being paid. They know he's there because he wants to be there. And I thought, what a glorious thing to be doing with your life. And it's simple. And it's not huge. But hey, you are having a significant impact on the lives and the futures of these third graders. Because if you're good at math, it's a big assist as you move towards college and career. Yeah. So point I'm making is volunteering could be the way to go to get you the contact with younger people and could be the way in which you could really be a contributor to the future of these kids.
Okay, we got some bullet points that you gave us. It's on our website as well. But one of the bullet points was, I like everything you said, but you got one comment here is, are you able to say no when people start to demand too much or request too much?
Well, I have to tell another story. This story goes back to my very first year lecturing for federal employees and retirement, which is about 1979 at the Department of Labor. And I had a lady in the first front row called Mary. And Mary said she was retiring in 2 months. So 2 years later, I'm back at the Department of Labor, and there's Mary in the front row again. And I said, Mary, I said, I thought you were gone. She said, I thought I was too. Well, I said, well, what happened? She said, I told my brothers and sisters that I was planning to retire in 2 months. And they all said, oh, that's great, Mary. You're single. you're retired, you can take care of mom. Family problem solved. Mary as the designated hitter. And Mary didn't want to be the designated hitter. So Mary unretired herself. So 2 years later, she's still working full time. I said, Mary, it's your life. It's not their life. It's your agenda. It's not their agenda. You got to call a family meeting. You got to get your mom in the room. You got to get yourself a social worker from a family service agency as referee. And you're going to start the meeting by saying, I'm retiring. And this is what I'm willing to do to help mom. And then the social work referee takes over and asks each of the rest of them, what are you going to do to help mom? And at the end of the meeting, hopefully, we have a family plan of care, not a Mary plan of care. And I said, you need to have your own life and your own agenda. And one of the big challenges, actually, is people are constantly knocking on the door. You're retired, or you can take care of mom, or you're retired. Well, you can take the kid to school pick up the kid from school if there's a snow day, and you're the designated hitter for the family. And sometimes it's for the neighbor, and sometimes it's for your local pastor who's hitting on you to do this and that and the other. Oh, you're retired, we can do blah, 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 blah. And so lots of people hit on single retirees. And you have to learn a two-letter word, no. And furthermore, you'd better not be trying to explain why you're saying no. Because as soon as you start explaining why you're saying no, they're going to be trying to bore holes in your explanation. Why you should do it, because they want you to do it. So I really think one of the more important skills for single retirement is the assertiveness about your own agendas and assertiveness about your own life and the use of your life, and that you don't have to explain to other people and defend yourself to other people about the choices you're making with your life.
Have you ever had the situation where somebody does retire and does pay attention to the grandkids and does do family things, and the novelty wears off after a while, and all of a sudden they still want to do it, but not to the degree that they have been? How do they gracefully back out of that?
Well, I think I have good friends who are doing exactly what you're talking about, and it's worked for them. It's worked for them, and it's worked for the family, and they've been a big help to a sister who's got kids and has tried to do a job at the same time, and so forth. So that can work. It really can work. But I think that if people are asking you to do things for them and you're willing to do it, but you're not sure you want to take it on long term, you've got to say, let's do a test run on this. And let's try it for a month, and then we'll evaluate whether this works for both of us or not. In other words, you need to set up the parameters, and you need to set up the time limits and the expectations up front. And I think that in general, that's a very important thing. In fact, I was reading something recently about all these 18 to 30-year-olds who've been moving back into their parents' houses. And the Pew Foundation did a study on this and found out that it's working better than expected. But they said, put it in writing. How long is this going to be for? What tasks around here are you going to take on? Are you going to throw a few dollars into the system to support this or not? They said, put it in writing. What is the agreement? What's the specs? And I think that actually that applies to singles who are being asked to take on family jobs. They need to set up time limits, and they need to set up evaluation review dates. And so you're not committing yourself to an unending expectation.
Okay. Now, this is very good. What works? And one thing that works is our affiliation with WAPM. And they have a word for us.
The responsibilities of balancing a federal career and family life can be overwhelming. How can you assure your family will live well amidst life's transitions? WAPA, a nonprofit association serving the needs of federal civilian employees since 1943, in partnership with NITP, the national leader in federal benefits, financial literacy, and pre-retirement training, provides answers to your personal planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit, Mondays, 10.05 a.m., for ideas that could change your future. WAPA members can now access frequently asked questions on key financial and retirement planning topics at waepa.org. Is your life on track? WAPA members also receive Fed checks, educational checklists for every stage of life and career. Visit WAPA today at waepa.org. WAPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10.05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Welcome back and with our discussion with Dr. Michael Creedon. So, Michael, before we took the break, we were talking about what works, and we were talking about younger people moving back home. About the need
for parameters and the need for time limits to commitments that other people are inducing you to doing this and doing that, and members of the family or your, you know, the local neighbor or the local religious organization or whatever, you know, because you're single, people say, well, you're free, you know, you can do this and you can do this and you can do this. And you may or may not want to be, you know, the full-time kind of caregiver for the grandchildren or for your sister's daughters or something. And I was just saying, you need to, if you're willing to take anything on, you need to set yourself up with an opportunity to evaluate it after X period of time and tell them up front, this is a test period and we're not committing to long term. We're committing for XYZ period of time and seeing whether that works for me after that period of time. By the way, one other thing I meant to mention earlier when we were talking about pets, the Philadelphia Corporation for Aging is the area agency on aging for City of Philadelphia, a very, very prestigious institution. And they have a website dealing with pets. And it's www.phillypets, P-H-I-L-L-Y, phillypetsandseniors.org. Okay, so if you're interested in the conversation we're having about pets, phillypetsandseniors.org is a website you can go to that will discuss these issues and maybe in more depth than we can hear in this radio show.
I'm sure nobody misinterprets Philly to mean horse. That was a pointed comment. Anyway, so you have another bullet point, and we've been talking about people in preparation for, but how about a sudden death of a spouse or a companion? And we had plans to do X, Y, and Z together, but now they're not there to do it.
Well, look, you know, loss like that, where it's a sudden loss and maybe 20, 30, 40 years of good life together, it can be very painful. And you just need, the number one thing I think is you got to tolerate yourself and give yourself time to get through this. Time is the healer. And it takes up to a couple of years for lots of people to get over the grief and to get over the sadness and to get over the loss. And I really think the best thing you can do for somebody who's having a loss like that is to listen to them. And I have a member of my family lost her husband, and a very good marriage of 40 plus years. I called her every week. And I'd always call them every week anyway. But I called her every week, and the conversation for maybe 2 years was mostly about the loss. But then the first grandchild showed up, and suddenly the conversation started swinging around a bit more to this baby, and this baby's giggling, or this baby is smiling, and this baby is these lovely eyes, and so the conversation lifted enormously when the first grandchild showed up. But it took a couple of years for my sister to work her way through you know, the pain and the loss. And I think we in America, we have a terrible tendency to want people to move on real quick and get over it and move on with their lives. And we're a hurry-up society in lots of ways. And I think one of the most important gifts you can give to people who are going through a serious loss like that is the gift of your ear, and to let them talk and let them express that what they're feeling. And so I think our number one gift to people who have sudden loss like that is the gift of time and the gift of empathy. So I really think our job is to help them to process, and they have to be tolerate themselves too, and they have to have allow themselves the time to work their way through this. And I said that's the number one thing. The other thing is, I really think when you're going through really big loss of any kind, whether it's, you know, the loss of a physical, like I visited a friend yesterday who just had surgery in both his knees. Well, that's a big loss when you have to learn to work with artificial limbs. And I thought, you know, support groups are a really good thing for people who are going through big time loss. And I really encourage people, there are support groups for widows and people who've lost partners all over the place. And I guess my own insight into that came from my wife, whose mother has Alzheimer's, and she's the only daughter. And she said to me, I need some help to deal with this stress. So she enrolled herself in an Alzheimer's support group, not far from maybe where we live, a daytime one. And she said she learned more from listening to spouses who are coping with Alzheimer's in their own home from a dearly loved partner. Then she said she could ever she learned from the books, but she learned a lot more from actually sharing the experiences with these people who are coping with it all the time. So she found that support group was an enormous help to her in dealing with the stress of her mother's loss of function.
Wow.
So I really think that we need to give people time, and we need to give people our ear, and people need to go and reach out for help themselves.
Okay, here's the question that would follow up on that comment. What if you have somebody that's somewhat introverted and knows they need to get out of the house, but they just can't get out of their own way?
Well, obviously some of us are extroverted and can be without people and have to be with people all the time, and I'm probably more towards that end of the spectrum. But, you know, even people who are very introverted need to push themselves a little bit to maintain contact. And I say you've got to get out of the house and you've got to be with other people several times a week. And it could be a volunteer thing. It could be a part-time job thing. It could be going to your local. I've always said the local Catholic Church's biggest contribution to the elderly is bingo. You know, and gets people out of the house, gets people with other people, gets people having fun. What's wrong with that? You know, and so, and you know, and by the way, Bible study can be another way to do it. There's lots of ways to get the social contact. And by the way, senior centers are a tremendous resource, and only 10% of our elderly ever go near a senior center. And, you know, you talk to them about why not. They say, oh, I'm not one of those old crocks. That kind of like it's ageism rampant among our 85-year-olds. I'm not one of those old crocks. And I always say Waxter Center in Baltimore has 11,000 members. There's more stuff going on than you can shake a stick at. But, you know, trying to get our seniors to realize that a senior center could be a really good resource. The local library, by the way, can be a tremendous resource of activity and service for retirees. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. 71% of all retiree volunteering, by the way, is through church, synagogue, and other religious institutions. And I think a lot of it is because these organizations are constantly banging people on the elbow, saying, will you do this and will you do this? So you have to say no to them too, you know. Mm-hmm. But the point I'm making is, if you're introverted and you're not a people person in the sense of needing people a lot, make yourself get out of that house and make yourself either take a course, go to Curves, go to Bible study, take a course at the local community college. There's all kinds of ways to get contact with people. Maybe you could take one of your nieces or nephews to a movie or something, a volunteer to do something like that. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to get contact with people. And I think, you know, we all have to have that. And I think you need to get out of that house and you need to be in contact with people. And I see no substitute for contact with other people as part of the agenda for retirement.
Okay. But how do you get them up? And, you know, I have friends, spouses passed, divorced, and they just sit in that house. And they're not that type of person, but they're afraid to open that front door and go somewhere. And I can talk, and I can say, you should do this or that. And they go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I know they're not going to do anything after I hang up.
Well, I had a fellow in one of my classes, and he came up to me and he said, I'm single. And he said, I've been retired. He said, I'm in this class. But he said, the last several years, he said, every single woman I've dated, I've met her at a dance class. So I say to single older adults, hey, head to the dance class. You might actually meet a human being that you could like and talk to and maybe go for a dinner with and have a bit of fun with and have companionship in your life a small bit. Loss of a spouse, whether it's through death or whether it's through divorce, it can be an awfully painful thing. But you have got to try and summon up the energy to kind of keep going with your life and keep contact with people. And I just think that there are lots of ways to keep contact with people. And I think, you know, if you know somebody who is a very introverted type, why don't you invite them to go with you to something or other? And I think, you know, invite somebody to go to the senior center with you. Maybe they'll find out that they might actually be able to enjoy themselves there.
So, and they would be with a friend.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't be there by themselves. Good.
Yeah, and
good
I actually think that's one of the things. If you have a parent and they're being a bit isolated, very often finding one of their friends who's willing to call them up and say, will you go with me to such and such, is a very good strategy for getting them into something new, activity level that'll get them out of that house. So use their friendships to help them move on with their lives.
Okay, bringing it down to its final, not down, we're heading towards the witching hour. Andrew's telling us, yes, you are. Preparing a will or an advanced directive or a living will. Now, with 3 minutes to go, this is a long subject, but when should somebody start to say, okay, here I am, I'm by myself, or there's just two of us. Do I need to change the will that I did 15 years ago?
Well, I think everybody has a duty to do a will, because if you don't have a will, you're maximizing the chances of family conflict over your stuff. And I think everybody has a duty to have a will. And I think when you retire, I want a will at retirement, not later. You could be driving down 95 and some idiot in a truck could rearrange you unexpectedly. And so I want a will at retirement. And as I said, if you have a will already, I think we need to revise the wills about every 5 years. And if you're moving when you retire, you might keep in mind that if you're moving to a different state, and about 40% of retirees move in state, about 10% move out of state. But if you move between out of state, the state laws are different, and you may need to redo that will in the new location. So I want a will. I also think you should consider doing an advance directive, a living will, or a medical power of attorney. And I think you should give a couple of hard copies notarized to one or two people.
Okay. Final comment, because we're running out of time. After all this good advice, how would somebody contact you?
Well, they could contact me through an ITP, I guess, and okay. And through your organization, with which I've had an association for many years. I live in Vienna, Virginia. I'm in the phone book, so people can contact me, I guess.
Okay.
I don't want to flutter them, but anyway.
We can try an ITP. It's for your benefit, F-O-R, your benefit, at NITPINC.com, and we will forward it to Michael. Okay, Michael, Andrew's telling us we better be quiet or we're going to be talking to dead air. Anyway, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure.
It's fun to be with you, Bob, and it's fun to talk to people about their futures. And the excitement of retirement is this is a bunch of good years, and it's yours. And the issue is, what do you want to do with a bunch of good years?
Okay.
Thank you.
I feel good today. Thanks for listening. We'll be on next week. See you then. Enjoy the week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.